that work?
Yes. Yeah, I always used to get a great ring around the results.
Yeah.
Everything else was, I used to get honors, but around the SAR treaty, there was always a red ring.
They're still going strong.
Okay, so 2 weeks ago, I feel that last week we were supposed to continue. So anyways, but this week we're continuing in Mirtz Hashem. We're going to do the challah that we said we were going to do last week. So I even have a little treat for everybody who's here. She printed it nicely. Afterwards, I'll give it to you, the recipe. So that's the beautiful recipe that we make always. But the challah recipe. Yes, the challah recipe. That's for my mother-in-law's. Yeah, it's a special one. But in the meantime, first we'll learn a little bit more about the challah, as we said. So yeah, it's a special, it's I don't know, for me it always works, but
sure it does.
It's different, tastes different than when she made it, I have to say, but it's,
you know, everybody, what you can give somebody your recipe,
and it still comes out different, it's amazing.
It's true.
Okay, so very quickly, I'm just going to read, I know we read these psukim, but there are just a few, and then we're going to go into depth in a different, last 2 weeks ago, we did do a few of the mefarshim on it, so we won't repeat that. But I just want to show you the psukim on the challah. So it is Parsha Shlach, it's Chumash Bamidbar, Perek Tezvav, and we are in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Okay, so it says like this, Vayidabra Hashem al Moshe Leimer, Dabrel b'nei Yisrael, v'yamarta aleihem, b'vayachem el ha'aretz asher ani mevi eschem shama. So as we said, speak to the, Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the children of Israel, say to them, upon your coming to the land to which I bring you. And this was very important. This mitzvah takes place immediately when they enter Eretz Israel, not waiting for them to conquer and divide the land. And what happens then, v'haya, and it will be, v'achalchem milechem haaretz, when you will eat of the bread of the land, tarimu truma la'Hashem, you shall set aside a portion for Hashem. Reishis Arisai Seichem, this is the famous Pasuk. Reishis Arisai Seichem means the beginning of your kneadings, because we know we take the challah from the dough, not from the challah that's already been baked, but from the dough. Challah, and it's called challah, this is what it's called. You shall set aside as a loaf, tarimu truma, ketrumas goyren, kein tarimu oisa. So as we say, like threshing floor portion, so you shall set it aside. And we know there is no amount according to the Torah. It doesn't give us an amount, not a minimum, not a maximum, but the Rabbanon did put an amount. And we said it's also Midai Raisa, strictly speaking, biblically, it is only obligated in Eretz Yisrael and only really when most Jews live in the land of Israel. So even now in Eretz Yisrael, it is only Midai Rabbanon, but it is stricter than us out of Eretz Yisrael. So we do challah out of Eretz Yisrael and we do make a bracha. In Eretz Yisrael, there are a few laws that are stricter, but it's still not Midai Raisa nowadays. And then
throwing away the piece of dough, do you have to say
a bracha? No, so you don't say the bracha when you say the bracha when you separate it.
Oh, only when you
take it off. Exactly. When you throw it, that's right, you just throw it.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's a bracha one says, but when?
Okay, so you know what? We're going to come to that soon. We're going to say, but that's a good question. But not when you throw it out, but that's a good question, yes. So we'll talk about exactly how we do it. But then he says, Mireishis, as he says very clearly, Mireishis Arisa Seichem, from the beginning of your kneadings, Titnu LaHashem, you shall give to Hashem Truma, a portion of Dere Seichem, for your generation. So this is the famous mitzvah, the mitzvah of challah. And as we said last time, the Sefer HaChinuch said it so magnificently, I want to read you just one line. We read the whole thing last time. He said, I just want to read it to you. He says that it becomes Mazayim LaGuf, Mazayim LaNefesh. When we do the mitzvah of, oh, it's so nice to see you. That's a treat. When we do the mitzvah of challah, we actually inject the bread, the physical, with a special blessing, which means that the challah becomes not just nourishment for our body, but it's nourishment for our soul. And that's a very magnificent thing. And that's what's so beautiful and special about this mitzvah. Okay, so we read all the other ones already, but now we're going to go into something a little bit deeper. So I will make sure, I'll watch the time, and we're going to do some of this inside. So in front of you, you have not the first booklet, because the first booklet we just finished. If you look at the second booklet that's in front of you, and it has a page 183 on top. Right? Yeah, beautiful. So this is taken from a sicha, and here what we are going to see is we are going to see some deeper insights. But I will make sure, I'm going to look at the time and follow, that we will also get to the more practical parts of the mitzvah. And you have a booklet in front of you with that you can take home with some practical parts of the mitzvah, exactly how you do it and like amounts. But first, let's look at some of the beautiful insight, deeper insight into the mitzvah of challah. We're going to see two different aspects from two different angles, both beautiful in depth. So the first thing is in Yiddish, and the second thing will be in Hebrew. As I say, it says page 183 on the top, and there's a little vav there, and it says fun yena shel Torah in Perush Rashi. This is a part of a talk from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but here we are going we've left the sort of technical parts out, now we're going into the philosophical part. So let's see what's the mitzvah of challah, what's the depth. So he says like this, es steht in Medrash, it's written in the Medrash, lama nismacha parshas challah leparshas avodah zarah. Now we didn't read this yet, but if you look at the psukim that follow immediately after these psukim in the Chumash, the next topic after the mitzvah of challah is the concept of getting rid of idol worship in the land of Israel. So we want to know what's the connection between the mitzvah of challah and idol worship. And the Medrash says like this, a very, very strong line. The Medrash says, Loimer lecha to tell us, shekol hamekayeh mitzvah challah, anybody who keeps and fulfills the mitzvah of challah, ki'ilu botol avodah zarah. It's as if they have nullified, gotten rid of idol worship. So keeping the mitzvah of challah gets rid of idol worship. V'chol ha-mevatel mitzvah challah, and somebody who doesn't do the mitzvah of challah, ki'ilu kayim avodah zarah. This is quite strong language. It's as if they've established and kept up and given strength to idol worship. Very strong. What's the connection between challah and idol worship? That if you do it, then you're getting rid of idol worship. If you don't do it, it's almost as if you're setting it up and you're sustaining it. Okay, so that's what we're asking. What's the connection and why is it that it's literally sustaining? So in the next paragraph, another question. Let's go to the number Zion on the second column. Di hasbara in them. So the explanation. Einer von di biurim in dem teuchen von mitzvah schala. One of the explanations of the concept of challah, why we do this mitzvah, that we say reishis arisei seichem, right, the first of your dough that you take, you separate a portion for Hashem. What's the idea of it? He says a very beautiful concept that sometimes we don't think so deeply about things we do. We just do it, right? Automatic. We're in automatic, so we don't take something to its actual depth. But if you analyze the mitzvah of challah, you'll see that it is such a fundamental mitzvah, not only that it provides spirituality within the food that we eat, but it's much deeper. So what is it? He says like this. Hayesas bichtei der mensch soll bakumen sein parnose und alle hitzdarchusim. So in order for a person, we know that he has to, you know, a person wants parnasa. They want all their needs. A person needs money, they need food, they need clothing, they need shelter, right? So what does a person have to do in order to make sure that they have it? And we know that dough symbolizes, in this context, that's like the staple of the diet. So that could symbolize the fact, the food that we get. What must a person do? Darfer tan di avaydis. So you have to do a lot of work first. First, you have to do charisha. Plow the field. I mean, we don't. We just go to Kohl's. But and sometimes they have flour on the shelf these days, and sometimes not. But anyways, you do plowing, and you do planting, and then you have to cut the wheat, right? So there's a lot involved until you can actually make the flour in order to make the dough that you want to eat the challah. These things are all necessary naturally. And this is equal by all human race, right? Any human being that wants to eat has to first go into the field, plow and plant and cut the wheat and go through the whole process. Otherwise, they won't have what to eat. This is by everybody, he says. So what happens? So then a person can start to think, kem in dachatosav, and a person can make a mistake, on meinin, as das is chas v'shalom nit farbunden mit dem Eibishtin. You can think it's not connected to God. Und erkrikti parnosse durch seine Avedis bedarke hateva. Right? The typical mistake. You can think, because I put effort, that's why I have what to eat. Because I planted, because I plowed, because I took such good care of the wheat, well, that's why I have what to eat. A person might think that. And he says, even if a filo im tinsulaymer, as the Eibishter atazai, eingestellt die Anhaga von Teva, so you don't think that God is related. And even if you do know, even if you're aware that God, Hashem orchestrated the world, right? He created the world and he made it in that way that things, you know, grow and then you cut them and then you'll eat them. So Hashem is the original designer and the original master. But what you might not be aware of is, and this is the problem that a lot of us make subtly, as Bishasa mentions Khairish Zareya Bakumter Itzarchosai, is aber noch dem ersten Mal einstellen die Hashpagufe nit verbunden mit der Eberstin. What we might think is that once Hashem has established things, then they just flow on their own. I mean, most of us don't think that because we're aware. But subtly, unfortunately, we don't look at every single part of our life that Hashem is literally orchestrating every single detail. So subtly we think this, but some people think it in a bigger way. Hashem created the world. He's the master, you know, the big designer, the master builder. But once he built it, everything can sort of, he's such a good builder that he left everything to run itself, right? So a person might think that. Therefore, what happens when they're eating their food? What do they think? Why are they eating their food? Why are they able to? Because they've put effort. And they went out into the field, and they were successful, and now they have what to eat. So he says, "Aydem kum tiyara in the mitzvah of challah." So now this is the lesson, very important lesson from the mitzvah of challah. What is the lesson? He says that reishis arisa seichem, that from the first of your dough you should separate a piece. Noch eder, and this is very important. Even before, good morning, Riva. Good morning. No problem at all. Good morning. So. No, it's all good. So even before you take a portion, right, even before you actually start to take this dough and shape it and roll it and want to bake it, so even before you do that, aner kenter, a person has to recognize, and this is the part that we have to realize, that's what we're doing when we do the mitzvah, is actually to focus on this, to focus our mind, to recognize, to realize, to internalize that what? As the racist, that the first, the ganze haschala from the Issa, how the beginning of the dough, and as we say, which represents everything, all of our needs, everything that we have, that we need to live with, he says, is what? Is truma la Hashem. Really belongs to who? To Hashem. They're all gods. It belongs to him. Not only is he the creator, the master, but it's really all his. Isn't it der Eiftu von seinem eigener Arbeit? It's not your work that made it happen. Mitzad hanhagas hateva, because naturally that's the way it is. No. Narhu hanoisin l'chakayach. What we recognize is that Hashem gives us the strength. Hashem gives us that energy. Who lets us wake up in the morning? It's only Hashem that gives us that energy to be able to accomplish whatever we're going to accomplish. And birchas Hashem hi tashir, and it's the blessing of God that makes us wealthy, that makes us be able to have all of these bounty, all this good that we have. Nochmer, even more than that, v'bal das hamachadish b'tuva b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh bereishis. Since we know that Hashem is constantly recreating the world, der eibishter is mahaved ibriya me'ayin liyeshia derega Hashem. Literally, every moment, as we know, is recreating the world. Otherwise, it would go back into nothingness. That's what we understand. I mean, it's hard for us to realize that, but that's the way it is. Therefore, we say, "Kumt oisas nidner is di birchas Hashem islabish in teva." So not only is the bracha of Hashem enclosed in nature, in zainim aysim, and in his actions, nor ala in yonei ateva. Rather, what we have to understand is that everything, all the natural events, on all of our actions, Seine Mitzad Atman im Ganzen kein Mitzius mit. This is hard for us to realize, to actually acknowledge, but they really don't, sort of, they're not even actually real in that sense. In other words, they're not independent of Hashem. There's nothing that is independent of Hashem, right? As we say, there's no existence outside of God. So we exist, it's true. We're not fake, we are real, but we're only here because we're dependent on Hashem. And it's like, you know, if you say, if it's like if something is there only because something else is causing it, so that thing that's there doesn't really have its own existence. It's totally, absolutely dependent upon the thing that it's dependent on. And we know we are dependent on Hashem. Therefore, every single thing that we enjoy, we attribute, we know that they're constantly coming from Hashem. So therefore he says, Zeyer ganzer Metzius nemt sein mechadesh b'chol rega von dem was der Eibishter is zey mehave mechaye u'mekayim. Right, they're only there because Hashem is constantly recreating it. Und der Ribber is reishis arisei seich, and that's why Taki, what happens with this mitzvah of challah? So gittos nit b'teres staka. Don't think of it that you're so nice, that when you're making your dough and you're working so hard and you worked so hard to earn your money and you worked so hard to go shopping and you worked so hard to make the challah dough, and now aren't you a nice person that you're taking the first piece, separating it, and you're going to give it to the kohen? Aren't you nice? No. What are you talking about? The whole thing belongs to God. The niceness is that Hashem allows you to even have it. First of all, that you're able to even do this. The fact that you can go through that whole process, that's really the kindness of Hashem, right? That we have the energy to do all the work that's involved. But then not only that, but not only can we do the work, but we can even reap the benefit of the work, right? Which is amazing, because sometimes we know in life we do work and we don't necessarily see the good that comes out of it. Here, not only do we do the work, but we even see the good that's coming out of it. And yet, it all belongs to Hashem. Therefore, the little piece that we give, it's like not stama token. It's beyond the token. It's the kindness of Hashem that He allows us to keep most of it and only give a little piece to the kohen. Right? That's what the challah is. This brings home to us the acknowledgement that who is the master, who is the creator, who does the world truly belong to? Hashem. And you are just the lucky recipient of all of Hashem's brachas. This is really what the mitzvah of challah really brings home. But even more, not only the lucky recipient, but you are the lucky one who Hashem is creating, and that Hashem allows you to exist, so to speak, and makes you exist. If you don't acknowledge that, that's idol worship. Because we say like this, what's idol worship? Idol worship is the belief that there is something besides Hashem that is controlling the world, that's running the world. And if you think you're running your world, well, you're the idol that you're worshiping. It sounds a bit harsh, but that's the truth. So we have to put ourselves aside, and we have to realize, first of all, we don't run our world, and neither does anybody else run our world, even though they might think they do, and neither do the global forces of the world run the world, as we might think they do, like the politicians or the governments, and neither do the natural order of the world run the world, right? The constellations and the planets and the weather, and nothing runs the world. Only Hashem runs the world. When we think that anything exists outside of the control of Hashem, that's already serving idols. Therefore, we say that somebody who does the mitzvah of challah, what they are doing is they are eradicating, if they do it properly, the whole concept of idol worship. But if you don't keep the mitzvah of challah, which means that you eat your bread without first acknowledging that the only reason that you have this bread is because Hashem, in His kindness, has given it to you and allowed you and made you have it and engineered it in a way that you can accomplish this, well, not only not only are you ungrateful, but you are actually serving idols. That's what you're doing. And you are strengthening the belief that something exists outside of Hashem. So that's the harshness, almost, in a way, of not keeping the mitzvah, and yet the beauty of, yes, keeping the mitzvah. So you see how this mitzvah is such a fundamental mitzvah, and actually one of the basis, in a sense, of our whole Yiddishkeit, in a way that it brings us to a real internalization of who we are and why we're here, and helps remind us constantly. That's why, I know I said last time, that's why it is good once in a while, if we could, to do the mitzvah of challah. Just such a beautiful mitzvah.
Did you bring the
recipe? Nice, Riva, you're going to get it. Anybody who comes gets the prize. At the end, you're going to get it. Okay. I just want to see if there was anything else I wanted, because I wanted this another beautiful lesson in a different sikha. I want to see if there was something else I missed here. Oh, yes, another very beautiful idea. Now, we said there's no measurements according to the Torah. Only the rabbis established a measurement. They established a measurement that at home, a woman, if she does it privately, I mean, we know, we just take a little piece off, but in the time of the baby, whatever it is, it was 1 out of 48 is the baker, and 1 out of 24, whatever that's supposed to mean, it's a very small amount, is the woman who's baking at home. So the question is, why is it that when a woman bakes at home, a private person, she has to give more than the baker in the bakery? Why? You would think the other way around, right? Well, so remember we said simply the answer was because a baker bakes so much challah. Therefore, his 1/48 will actually come to a substantial amount, right? So it's worth giving to the kohen, whereas at home we bake so little, if you would give that little, it would be nothing, right? So that's just a simple practical answer. But there's a much deeper answer also. Very interesting thing, this. This is a fascinating, beautiful idea that the Lubavitcher Rebbe shares, that's a very interesting perspective. Sometimes when we look around, we think that a person who's sheltered, for example, a person who sits and learns Torah all day, will have more emunah in Hashem than a person who's a businessman out in the world. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, actually, it's the other way around. Many times you will find that somebody who has to go out into the world and face the world, especially somebody who's involved in business, and as he says it clearly, you know, in business you see, especially nowadays, how everything is so shaky, right? The stocks go up, the stocks go down. Well, that's just on a, you know, that level, but everything is so shaky. You have no idea what the interest rates will be tomorrow, how much the money will be worth tomorrow, how many customers will come tomorrow, right? So you're constantly reminded that there's some higher power running the world. And everything that you are doing, every single thing that you will do, doesn't ensure a good result. You hope, you daven, right? You have emunah and betzachin, but it's up to Hashem. Whereas a person who's in a very sheltered environment, for example, one example would be a person who sits and learns Torah all day and other people provide them with their physical needs, they might not be so aware of that because they don't see that fluctuation constantly. They are just supplied with what they need. Or a woman at home, the Rebbe says. A woman at home, let's say, if in those days when the woman didn't earn the money herself, so this is just the example given, the model of it, if she is given, let's say for example, she is delivered her flour, and she takes her flour and now she uses it to bake challah, so to her all she knows is that the flour arrives at the doorstep, now she has to do her work, so she has to daven that the weather is good, that the challah will rise, that she'll measure things correctly. But that's not so fluctuating. What's much more fluctuating is if she's going to have the flour or not. But that's not up to her. That's being given to her by somebody else. So therefore we say that sometimes somebody who lives in a more sheltered environment has to give more in order to remind themselves more that there is a God running their world. Which actually is a very beautiful idea, meaning to say that in some areas of our life, where we feel more comfortable and we feel more secure and more certain, that's where we have to remember, don't feel so secure in yourself. Don't think that things, just because they happened this way yesterday, are going to continue to happen that way today and tomorrow. No, even the normal things that we take for granted that do happen, I mean, Baruch Hashem, they do generally happen, right? You go out, the car starts, Baruch Hashem, the sun comes out eventually, Baruch Hashem, you turn on the washing machine, usually it works, Baruch Hashem, right? And you expect do. So hopefully it does. But what we have to constantly remind ourselves, even more in that circumstance, is that just because the washing machine worked yesterday doesn't mean it's going to work today. And if it does, we have to say thank you to Hashem. And when we go out and put the car in the ignition and it actually starts, thank you Hashem. Not the other way around, that when it doesn't start, oy vey, what's happened? Rather, when it does start, thank you Hashem. And that's why the woman at home gives more challah, to remind us that we need extra reminders. We have to constantly acknowledge and be aware that our day-to-day life, which is so, in a certain sense, predictable, we can't take it for granted. It's all because Hashem is making it work, and therefore we should be filled with even a greater gratitude that it is working, and acknowledgement that it's Hashem who's making it work. So that's why there is that difference. Whereas the baker in the bakery, perhaps he's more aware because he's more dependent on things. Sometimes things actually don't work more often, and therefore he acknowledges it more naturally. So it's actually a very beautiful idea for us in life. It just goes as we all have both areas, and we have to remember to apply it in both. So that's the first thing. Then we come to one more beautiful idea before we go to the practical. So I'll show you something really beautiful here. There's another thing about, there's another few beautiful lessons of challah. So we said also the word was that the Chumash used was Reishis Arisei Seichem. Reishis Arisei Seichem. So in the next booklet, I just want to show you inside, just a few, just two or three paragraphs. So the booklet starts with 83 on the top. I'm going to show you something nice. We're going to go to page, actually to page 84, I think, or 85 even. Here, so I want to see one. It's a beautiful paragraph here, and then, okay, you know what? Everybody, go all the way to page 85 on the bottom. Let's see. Okay, yeah. I don't see the word here. Oh, yeah, 85 on the bottom. So there's a Dalit, but it's the second to last paragraph on the page. It says, "Vizehu gamdia kaloshin reishis arisei seichem." The pasuk says, the beginning of your dough. So the word arisei seichem is the dough, right? So we say, ki mataras ha-mitzvah eina ha-challah she-hufrasha. The purpose of the mitzvah, we're emphasizing over here the dough that you have in front of you. The purpose is not so much that piece that you separate, benitna l'kayin, and you give it to the kayin, and then the kayin eats it. Ela ha-matarahi, rather, what is the purpose? Chelek ha'isa, the part of the dough, shenishar la'acharei hafrashas ha'challah, that remains after you separate the challah. Maybe that's why we call it challah. You know, everybody says it's a mistake. We call the loaf challah, but really that's not the challah. The challah is the piece that you've separated and given to the kayin. And yet, everybody calls the big loaf challah. That's what it's called. They're exactly right. Why? Because of this. Because the truth is, the purpose is to remember the challah in that big challah that we're left with. Let's see how he says it. So he says like this, because behind you, shela'achrei shemekayim mitzvah challah, after we actually fulfill the mitzvah of challah from the first of your dough, mis'alis sha'ar ha'isa, the rest of the dough actually is elevated, ba'ayfen sheyuchan liyos mimena tachlisoy shel ha'lechem, that it's able to fulfill the purpose of the bread. And what is the purpose of the bread? Lahachies es ha'adam, to give life to the person physically and spiritually. And he explains quite beautifully that what happens like this, that fascinating thing. When we eat something, so you make a bracha first, right? That's the ideal. Make a bracha. So when, as you take a bite, you first make a bracha, you give elevation to the physical thing that you're going to eat, because you've blessed it, right? You've reminded and you've brought godliness into it. But then, so first you elevate the food, but after you digest, you ingest the food and then you digest it. What does the food give you? It gives you energy, kayach. You use that kayach to serve Hashem. Now you elevate, now the food elevates you. So first you elevate the food, and then the food gives you an elevation, because now the food empowers you to do a mitzvah. So it's a very beautiful combination that happens when we eat. And this is actually also shown in the mitzvah of challah. First, we take off that piece for the kohen, then, which nowadays we burn, but the idea is we know, we designated that it's God. The leftover challah, we eat. But what happens with that? That's a very important part sometimes people forget. Well, on Shabbos, sometimes we just take a nap afterwards. But the truth is that it energizes. The nap itself is also holy. So it all energizes us. Let's say we go, we daven, we bench afterwards, we say a tillim, we do a mitzvah, a kind something for somebody else. All of that energy came from that challah that we ate. So we elevate the challah. In turn, the challah elevates us. There's a beautiful, beautiful combination happening. It's similar. It actually says in, I think it's in the Navi Yeshayahu, when it describes the higher realms. So it says that he saw a vision. And in the vision, there was a throne. And obviously, God was sitting on the throne. But around the throne, around the chair that God was sitting, were four animals, right? Holding up the chair. So it explains beautifully that there's two concepts. The animals are holding up the chair, but then the chair is also lifting the animals. So you have both things happening, where you are elevating the food, but then the food elevates you. And the Alter Rebbe actually discusses this at length in his deep Maimorim. He says, how is it possible that bread can elevate a person? Bread is lower than a person, right? We know the hierarchy in the world, that there's the concept of Doimim, which is the inanimate, which is the lowest, and then we have the tzimeach, the plant life. They are a little bit more alive, and then we have animals that are more alive, and then we have the human being, which in a sense, and then obviously a human being with a godly soul, that's the most revelation of godliness and could do the most in this world. So interesting how the lowest object can actually give an elevation to the highest object. That's quite strange. How is it that a person is dependent on bread to live? Strange if you think about it. We are much greater. We are much higher. We're closer to God. And we're more revealed godliness. But that's the point. You know, in Chassidus we have this famous concept. It's not just in Chassidus, just philosophically. Something that comes from a higher place, when it falls lower. Which means that there is a spark of holiness which is found within the bread that comes from even a higher source than we come from. That's why, you know, you find many Yiddish, like mamas, babas, you say, don't throw out the bread. You know, it's true. It's holy. It is. We cannot treat, right, Rona? It's a...
But what can you do?
I know. It's always the problem. Oh, when it's gone moldy, it's a problem. Feed it to the birds before it goes moldy. That's what people say. I know. It's a hard one. It's a hard one. Because the truth is that as a Jew, there is a holiness in the bread, as we say. The bread enables us to live, as we know. And that's because it has these tremendous sparks of holiness, of godliness within it. And when we ingest it, we ingest those sparks of godliness, and they give us a boost. We elevate it, it elevates us, and there's a beautiful, beautiful process that's happening. This is part of the mitzvah of challah. There's one more beautiful thing, lesson, unbelievable lesson, also, because very interesting, if you think about it, when do we do the mitzvah? In the process of the making of the bread. So we don't take the challah, like let's say if you make the challah loaves, put them in the oven, right? You don't divide the piece after you've baked it, right? Or even after you've shaped it. When do you do it? It's interesting.
You've got to say the brucha.
Exactly. And when do you do that?
I'm going to eat it.
Okay. Before eating it. That's one time. That's right. That's one time that we... Exactly. So when do you take that piece? So interesting. So first you have to take flour, right? We know flour are little pieces of whatever, flour. You mix it with water. You knead it. And you make it into a dough, right? So now it's a cohesive dough. Usually, halachically, we wait until it rises. After it rises, before you shape it, before you do anything else, you take off the piece of challah. So the question is, why at that point? Why is it important to have the flour mixed with the water, kneaded, and only then do we separate the piece of challah? Why, technically, we could have, let's say, taken off a half a cup of flour, right? Or done it all the way at the end, once it's baked, right? What's this stage over there? So I want to show you something beautiful. This is on page 87. Okay, so on the top of page 87, a very beautiful thing. He says, Gam, Ka'ashera kemach v'hamayim nimtzoim lifonav. When the flour and the water are found before you, right? So it's on the counter, all ready to go. Hine kaidem shenis arvu, before you mix it, v'nilshu, and before you knead it, yachtav together, i'efshar adayin l'kayim mitzvah chala, you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of chala. V'yaseira mizeh, gam ka'asher chelek, even if part of the flour has been already kneaded with the dough, but some of the crumbs, in other words, some of the flour pieces, did nilshu, has not been incorporated into the water. They weren't kneaded. They weren't mixed. Let's just say, and I mean, nobody would want to do this, but let's just say you had a lot of flour there, and you mixed part of it, right? And a part of the flour remains. So now that flour that remains, that's not, when you do the challah mitzvah, that flour that's there, and let's say even if it's in that same big bowl, you would have to, if you mixed it with water afterward, you would have to take challah from that again. In other words, the only flour that is exempted is the one that has already been kneaded, already been mixed. You understand? You, if there's extra flour laying around, I mean, you don't need to take challah from that unless you make dough out of it. But if you didn't make it into this dough and incorporate it into this dough, even if it's already there on the counter, it's not part of the mitzvah, right? That's not, if let's say tomorrow or the next hour you decide to make a new batch of dough, you still have to do another piece of challah from that new batch, right? So what we're trying to show over here is emphasizing that the mitzvah is done when the flour is mixed with the water and kneaded. Why? Okay, so let's see why. Okay, so here he says, V'abir bazeh, lefisha mataras mitzvah challah. What's the purpose of the mitzvah of challah? He lifal aleha bedivrei harishus sheis achtu imelekus. So here we have another angle. That what is the idea of challah? The idea of challah is to take all of the permissible realm. In other words, we're not talking about things that are forbidden. We're talking about things that are permissible. The normal mundane things like flour and like all the things that we go about doing. And what do we want to do with them? We want to unite them with Hashem. Sheis achtu imelekus. We want to sanctify them. We want to elevate them. We want to give them a boost. We want to show that even the normal, everyday, typical things that we do, they're not disconnected from Hashem. We live a very cohesive life. And every aspect of our life is serving Hashem, right? So therefore, the little pieces of flour has to be mixed with the water. Why? What does the flour represent? They're separate pieces, right? As we know, flour, if you take it, it's like little pieces. That represents the physical world. The physical world is a world of fragmentation, right? Doesn't scream out godliness, that's for sure. It definitely doesn't, right? It's a world where things are separate, things are pieces. That represents something which doesn't have a cohesive common denominator, one master, one God. That's the physical world. So the flower represents the material physical world. What does water represent? Always represents life, Torah, God, that's right. So you take the flour, you mix it with the water, and once you've done that, now you can take a piece and say, oh, I'm sanctifying my life. This represents how I'm going to live my life. My life is going to be not a life of flour and water separate, not a life of just water or just flour, but a life of both mixed together, which means that I will go about my mundane life because that's what we do and that's good. And we're meant to take a walk, eat, drink, do all the physical things, bake, cook, everything, shop, everything. But everything is inserted and injected with godliness, with a holiness, with a focus that it all can be used. First of all, it's all from Hashem and it can be used in a good way to bring more goodness and godliness into the world. So this is the beauty of, that's why it's a dough. It's a very beautiful thing. That's why we do it dafka then. No, usually after it rises, we do. We let it rise, so it's a proper dough.
What about the flour that you have to put on the board?
Okay, so that's not a problem because that's not the right amount. You'll see. You have to only take challah from a certain amount. So a little bit of flour is fine. No problem. You can use as much as you like. Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. Okay, so just like he said, just read it quickly. He says like this. He says, "Shakemachu pirurim pirurim." Right, the flower is like pieces. Nekudai snifrodes. They're individual, differentiated pieces. V'aliyadei hamayim, and through water, misachdim anekudais. We unite all the different pieces, all of the fragmentation anefrodes. V'nasim chativa achas, and we make them into one piece. V'inyanei beruchni is the concept spiritually. Shadvarim hagashmiim, that the physical things, shehem dvarim nefrodim, that are fragmented, that are individual, that sometimes feel like they don't connect to Hashem, bedugmas hanukudas hanefrodim shalakemach, similar to those pieces of flower, what do we do? Misachtim yachtav, we unite them together, al yedei ha-toyre, like through toyre, as you said, shenim shalalamayim, which is compared to water, ein mayim ela toyre, and therefore, that's when we do the mitzvah. I just want to see... Oh, but he says a beautiful thing, and also we have to remember that this unity, this constant, this idea that there's one God running through everything, you can't just do it in part of your life. You can't just say, that's good for this morning, but this afternoon, I'll forget about God. It doesn't work that way. So you have to take all the pieces of the flour that you're using in the dough. I'm not talking about the little pieces after for rolling, but all the pieces that you want to incorporate into the dough have to all be incorporated into the dough, right? That's how it works. You can't just leave them out. It doesn't work that way. You cannot leave pieces of your life out and say, that's mine, you know? That's me. That's a separate part. I don't want to have that. That has nothing to do with Hashem. It doesn't work that way. It all becomes one piece, one united, one piece together with the water. And this is the mitzvah of challah. That's a very beautiful mitzvah. And that we find also, we said before, Reishis Arisa Seichem, that Arisa Seichem was the beginning, right, of the dough. So it says like this also, Arisa is like, also a translation is a crib, a cot where a baby sleeps. Reishis Arisa Seichem means that from the beginning. So literally, when a child is very young, that's when you start Shema Yisrael, Ma'ida Ani, because we give the first, the best to God. But in our own life, the first part of the day, when we're fresh, when we wake up, Reishis Arisei Seichem, as soon as we get out of bed, right away, you daven. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to do something holy immediately. And only then can we go into the rest of the day and live our life with all the normal mundane things that we do. So that's another very beautiful idea, all from the beautiful mitzvah of challah. So now, quickly, let's see some of the other. Now, if you look at your next booklet on your thing, I'll show you something. This is, I think you can take it. It's a very nice thing I found. This is written by Rabbi Yosef David Chanowitz. I'm not sure which website it is. Does it say over there? Okay, it's from the Okay. So here we have very, very clear. I'll just go through some of it. He says, okay, at the beginning he gives a nice little inspirational piece that we know that when Yitzchak was looking for a sign that Rivka was the right bride, right? How did it, you know, she came into the tent and there was blessing in the challah and he knew this is it, right? So that was it. Let me just see something. It says a beautiful thing in the second paragraph that there is a special connection between woman and challah. It's a fascinating thing that you in the home, it's the woman who has to separate the challah. And if somebody else does it, they actually have to ask you permission. That's what it says. So, because you're the master of your home, you're the balabasta, so it's up to you, and you are the one who does the mitzvah. Then we say like this, also, why is it that women are entrusted with this mitzvah? This is a very important thing that we didn't mention. It says, look in the paragraph, it says another reason that the mitzvah of challah is entrusted to women is explained in the Medrash. When Hashem wished to create man, he mixed some earth and water together to form a dough and shape man. You know, we're made like clay, that's what a person is. We're earth, water, right? We have all the four elements. And then we say, that's why Adam was called the Chalasai Shel Olam. That's what the Medrash calls us, Chalasai Shel Olam. Adam was called the Chala, that's what he was. But when Chava sinned by causing Adam to eat the forbidden fruit, she brought death into the world, thereby ruining the challah. So the mitzvah of separating the challah offers women a unique opportunity to rectify chava's sin. So that is one of the aspects of the mitzvah. So it has all the positive things, and it also has this concept of rectifying that sin, of the death that we've brought into the world. Now we sanctify the challah, and we bring back life into the world. Okay, let's see what the mitzvah is. So going down onto the next page, that's page one. Going to page number two, so as we mentioned some of these halachas, it says that the mitzvah is done mainly in Eretz Yisrael. when they entered the land, and most of the people have to live in the land. And it discusses also that it's given to the Kohen, and we know because the Kohen didn't have a portion, remember, they didn't inherit a piece of Eretz Yisrael, right? So therefore, they can't plow and plant, they don't have. So therefore, we give them challah. Let me just see. Okay. And as we mentioned also that it's midrabbanon, and I just want to see, look where it says, you see where it goes down to types of pastries. Okay, so here we go to a little bit of the, this is not a halacha lesson, so I'm gonna not going to answer many halacha questions, but just see a little bit. How does it work when you're baking? Let's say somebody has a big party, because most of us, when we make a simple cake, we're only making small amounts, so it wouldn't be a problem. But let's just say you're making a large amount, right? And it's not just challah, but it's pastries. Okay, so let's see, here's an example. If the mezainis bread has water, then you do take challah with a bracha. Some people might think that it's not. I don't know how you make exactly mezainis bread, that's its own question. What about sheet cakes? Like, sheet cakes are like normal cakes, like a marble cake or a sponge cake, you know, big cakes, right? Let's say somebody's making a lot. They have a kiddush and they're making a lot of this cake, or you're working a chavis, I don't know, in the shul, I don't know exactly. Anyway, so many cakes call for recipes without water. Okay, that's an interesting thing because it needs water. Is a very important ingredient to be able to take challah with a bracha. So he says one should take challah without a bracha unless water is added. The other factor to consider, if the amount of the other ingredients, meaning the oil, the eggs, the sugar, are larger than the amount of flour, and are the predominant taste, right? So that one cannot eat more than a little of the cake at a time, then there are places that say you don't take, say, separate challah, even if you're making, I don't know, 20 cups of flour. It doesn't matter. If there's a lot of other ingredients as well, then you wouldn't be, you don't have to worry about taking the challah. There's an interesting question we'll see in a minute. What happens when the dough is runny? Right? Cake is different than challah dough, right? It's not, how could you take a piece? How could you, right? So we'll see in a minute. Let's see if this, okay. But he says like this. So then he gives an example. Water bagels and pretzel bagels. Even though they are boiled before baking, they do require hafrashas challah. Pancakes, what about if you're making pancakes? He says, do not require because they're fried. You see that? Donuts, they're fried. Because when you make donuts for Hanukkah, I don't know if any of you have ever done it, it's not hard, but I've made it once or twice. It's only good, I think the bakeries are definitely better, but whatever. But if somebody does, if they want to do it, I hope sometimes feel with the children, there is a lot, it's quite a big dough, it is. But you're going to fry it. So if you're going to fry it, then you don't have to take challah. But if you're going to bake it, then you do. So it's interesting. I know, but that's more of a baking process than a frying. Yeah, but it's interesting, Riva. I know.
It was oil.
Oil. It's true. It's true. There was oil. I know. It's a fascinating thing how it must have been water as well. Yeah. You never made donuts, huh? But you make other things. You make kichel. No? Kichel. There we go. Okay. Then he says...
You could.
Wow, there you go. But you're going to fry it. So I don't think you have to worry about it.
Now, I'm talking about when you bake kichel.
Oh, if you bake it, then you should.
You can actually take
so there might be a dough. Yeah, so maybe you should. Yeah, it's a good idea. Without a bracha, because you have to know if you're using enough flour. And what is the liquid that you put in with it? What do you put in with the flour for kichel? Just oil?
No flour. No water.
No water. No, so then you wouldn't have to. So you wouldn't have to worry. No, then nothing to worry. Okay.
Eggs.
Okay, so you don't have to worry. Eggs and flour. Okay. Look how he says pasta. Interesting. Pasta requires separation of challah because it's macaroni, ravioli, whatever it is, without a bracha, since one might bake these later on. Right? You know that sometimes people make lasagna. They bake it. Cookies and rugelach. Rugelach is a kind of thicker dough with a yeast dough. So he says, if the recipe calls for water, one should take challah with a bracha. But that's if, remember, it has to be enough flour. We'll see in a minute how much that amount is. And if not, one should not say a bracha. In addition, if the pastry is so sweet that one cannot eat so much at once, it may not require a frasha, like the sheet cakes mentioned above, which means sometimes what you would do is just take a piece without a bracha, just to be sure, but not make the bracha, because you probably, it's more like not bread, if you know what I'm saying. It's more bulkis. Yeah, it's interesting. Some people make ragalach from the leftover challah, though. I've seen people do that as well. So it's interesting how that, yeah. Okay, then he says like this. So now let's understand. First, two very important things to know. The challah, the wheat has to be only from the five types of wheat. Nowadays, especially, there's all kinds of different flours that people get, right? You can get, I don't know, you get these quinoa flour and corn flour and rice flour, potato flour, right? Do they require the mitzvah of challah? No. So look, it says, only from the five kinds, it's called five minei dagan, wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. Those are the ones that you would... They make bread, exactly. That's considered according to the Torah. So the other ones, no. Now, let's see, he says, if the recipe calls for a mixture of flour from these five, and the amount of flour combined into the dough is enough for the shear, and we'll see what that is, then the mitzvah of afrashas challah can be fulfilled. Interesting also, it says it somewhere further also about the liquid. Go to the next paragraph. A batch of dough that was made with flour and water requires hafrashas challah. The same is true for flour mixed, and this is also interesting, with any of the other, this shiva mashkim. In the Torah, there are seven liquids that allow foodstuffs to become impure, which means that any of those liquids, what are they? Milk, wine, not any oil, just olive oil. So you know how you said kichel? Kichel you wouldn't make with olive oil. I imagine you'd make it more with a sunflower or a canola or a vegetable oil. That's not a problem. But if you're working with olive oil, even if there's no water, you still have to take challah. So it's actually interesting, because that's considered, yeah, one of the liquids. Honey and dew, blood, I mean, we don't cook with. Okay, then you separate challah with the bracha. But obviously, as we're saying, it has to have the right amount of flour. Now, here comes the big problem. What's the right amount of flour? This is where people sometimes run into problems, because they say, you know, it's going to make too many challahs and I don't want to use so much flour. But also, there is differences of opinion as far as how much flour needs to be used. I must be honest with you. So, there is some very stringent opinions that say that you have to use like 17 and a half cups, which is 2.3 kilos of flour. That's a lot, but that's the highest, but there is definitely, I mean, I don't go by that, because my mother-in-law always, she did it with just under 2 kilos of flour, and it, she always made challah with a bracha, so I do that as well. That's more like 13 and a half cups of flour, 14 cups, and that's okay to be able to take challah with a bracha.
Do you have a mixed master to do that? Or do
I do it by hand, because I am a lazy, I hate washing machines. So everything is by, even grating is by hand. I'm just so lazy. See, they have a whole thing with the eggs over here, but anyways, it's very interesting. Here they go, when they give the amounts, they give it in pounds. I just want to read you exactly, because I printed off here. So there's two opinions here I printed. One said like this, cake flour, it said, but what's important, yes, to know, is that at a certain point you should take off challah without a bracha. So what's the amount that you should do without a bracha, right? So it says, if you are making, let's say, white bread flour, 1.3 kilos. So if you're using 1.3 kilos of flour, it's about 8 cups, I think, then you should take off without a bracha. But then when do you start with the bracha? So according to this thing, it was 2.29, then you can do with the bracha. But I have another opinion over here that says, how does it say it over here? Okay, let me see, two customs. So here it says 3.6 pounds, which is 12 and a quarter cups. They do say a bracha already. And some will say a bracha only with 16 and a half cups, which is a 5 pound, which, as we know, that's over 2 kilos, as we said. That's like 2.2 kilos. So you can rely on the more lenient approach. And if you use just under 2 kilos, as we say, about 13 cups of flour, then it's okay to make a bracha.
And do you use plain cake flour or the double zero flour?
So it depends. I mainly use the plain white flour. But it's
cake flour.
I guess you call it cake flour. Yeah, the normal white flour. I guess so. So I know I don't buy. See, I just buy the white wings in the bag, and it's like it's a 1 kilo or a 2 kilo bag of the white wings flour. It's funny. I use the coles flour for baking ragalach, But challah, I don't know why, I find challah is a little more sensitive. That's my find. And it does work a little better with a bit of a better flour. But you could use ordinary flour. Yeah, even white Kohl's flour, it's also, you could make it, you know. But yeah, so that's the amount. I'm just thinking if there's any other thing that's important to know.
You see bread flour.
Bread flour. Yes, there is. So I have used it. There's sometimes I come in, like you're saying, the 3 zeros. So I've used that. It could, some that's a bit more sticky, I find after. I don't know. It has more gluten, I think, because that's the idea of it. So it makes it better. I don't know. Nowadays, whatever's available, I just buy it.
Flour.
Terrible. So I don't know. Yeah, it's enough for you. So just a very quick thing is to remember. So after we make you mix the flour, the whatever the recipe is, you let it rise. You knead it. You let it rise. Before you're about to shape it, that's the time that you should do the mitzvah. So what do? You leave the flour covered, right, in the thing after it's risen, and you stick your hands in and you take off a piece, but you don't separate it totally. You just hold that piece. You make the bracha, asher kedishanu b'mitzvaysa v'tzivanu lahafrish challah. Some people say min ha'isa, from the dough. Some people just say to separate the challah, whatever your nusach is. And then you break it apart totally, and you make sure, as we said last week, put it away. Don't let it get mixed back in, otherwise you're in big trouble. So you put it aside. Now either you burn it fully covered in the oven, or you burn it on the stovetop if you have a gas stove, you can do that. Or you put it away and let it rot, whatever system you have, and then you dispose of it. After you've taken the challah, then you can shape your things. Now, sometimes people are unaware that I think this is halachically 100%, that you're meant to use the whole flour, that dough, you're not supposed to freeze. Some people have a thing where you can shape the challahs and then freeze them, not baked. But that's not okay if you're for the mitzvah. If you freeze the challah after it's made, that's fine. But you should be baking the challah all together afterwards, because that's part of it, that it's one dough and being baked all in one. There's a lot of questions like if you go to a big challah bake, and if you separate the doughs, and if people are going to take, I don't know, you have to ask. I don't know how that works. Also, if you buy challah dough from a bakery, if it's not owned by a Jew, you probably don't even have to take challah. So there's lots of different questions, halachic questions. But if you're making at home, which is quite simple, this is the directive. So after it's risen, before you shape it, you take off the challah, you make the bracha.
You can't just be burnt. You can't just throw it into the
pot. Well, you could, but it's best if it goes a bit off first before you throw it out. Yeah, that's the best way.
We had a combustion.
Oh, so then it would go off there.
Went into the fire.
Okay, oh, then it went into the fire. Shoo, oh, you were lucky. That was amazing. So it burned. That's right, I know. I know. That's the problem. Now it's a bit harder. Some people do it on like an outside grill. You know, they used to sell them those disposable grills. But or you, like I say, if you want to put it into the oven, don't put it into the oven the same time the challah is in there. No. It's not a good idea to do that. I don't know what's to do with the I don't know.
Put it in the microwave.
Wrap it and put it in the oven afterwards, totally, until it burns. Or as we said,
then
you throw it away.
Yeah,
it's after the oven. Yes.
It's
very interesting, all the different ways.